Good morning and welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Amy G. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Today's date is October 31st, 2024. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are at the end of the chapter, We Agnostics. We are on page 56. Reading the first paragraph, one night when confined in a hospital, through two paragraphs, ending in, who are you to say there is no God? Today's readers are, and thank you, Team Thursday, for your service this October, Katie G., Anne-Marie M., Martha Z., On the 12 Steps, Jackie D., Traditions, Joni C., Newcomer greeter Reva P. and our host Christine G. for the second awesome unrecorded hour. The reference numbers for yesterday 7 a.m.'s meeting, 21,870. That's 21870. And for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting, that's October 30th, Wednesday, 21,875. That's 21875. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask for Jackie D. to read the 12 steps. Please go ahead, Jackie.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jackie D. I'm a compulsive overeater from Georgia. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service this month, and thank you for your service.
Thank you so much, Jackie D. Okay, I will now ask for Joni C. to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Joni.
Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Joni C. Okie dokie, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. If you go over, you'll hear me say time. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only, please. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Again, this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study in the Big Book. We are in the chapter We Agnostics. We are on page 56 at the first paragraph. Going through two paragraphs, and KG is going to get us started. Go ahead, grab the mic, girl.
Hey, thanks for taking the meeting, Amy. Good morning, everyone. This is KG. I'm a recovered compulsive eater in Boston, Mass. One night, when confined to a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asks himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he had lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came that crowded all else. Who are you to say there is no God? And so grateful for this paragraph. I have to be honest, when I first read it, I was terrified because I've not had a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience like this, which is what we're reading, right? Which is the spiritual experience is when God comes to somebody suddenly in a white light sort of experience. But the best news of this chapter is that when we draw near to him, he disclosed himself to us. For some of us, you know, the revelation is sudden, but some of us grow into it more slowly. And for me, that's really what this is. This is not a novel. This is a textbook. And this textbook tells me how to have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. I also find it really interesting that there's only one must in this chapter. And the must is that I must find a spiritual basis of life or else. And so for me, what I really relate to is the prejudice, right? Like I needed to claim to everyone I'm spiritual, not religious. I don't identify with religion. But I find, and that's not my background noise, I find one of the most powerful statements later in the book is to be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer. When God removes the prejudice, the old ideas from my heart, like religion is out to get me or people are out to get me, and then I can open myself to God, because the truth is God is not in the prejudice, right? God is in the present moment, and we are all God's kids, whether we believe in religion or we don't believe in religion. All I know is that my prejudice, my old belief, my ideas that something needs to look a certain way in order to be okay, that God needs to look a certain way in order to be okay, have held me back. And what does a spiritual basis of life look for me today? Well, first of all, I get out of the boxing ring with God, right? My arms aren't long enough. I stop fighting the food. And I admit that without God, my life is totally unmanageable. And I believe that there is a power greater than me, because in step one, I'm convinced I lack power. So if I lack power, there has to be another power. And so I'm literally rolled into step two, where I see my insanity. But my spiritual mode of living today goes much beyond that. It goes way beyond step two in terms of doing personal inventory, seeing where I'm wrong, promptly admitting it, going through the day, asking God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say, and to whom? And so God took this precious, you know, old ideas, biased woman, and turned me into a woman of God. And I get to live a spiritual life today, which is not, I do not suffer from compulsive eating today. And that in itself is a miracle. And with that, I pass.
Good timing. Thank you, Katie G, for getting us started. Okay, so we'd love to hear more on what was read, but if you have shared in the last couple of days, namely Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday, we ask that you step aside and allow others to share their experience, strength, and hope so everyone has an opportunity. So who would like to share on what was read? Please give me your first name and the initial of your last name.
Harlan G.
Mary K.
Nicole
G. I heard Nicole, and who was before Nicole?
Nate in Tennessee.
Nate. Okay.
Harlan G.
I got you, Harlan. I got Larry. I got Nicole. I got Nate. Who else?
Anietta R.
Anietta.
Reva P.
Reva. Gotcha.
Sarah F.
Nancy P.
Nancy P. And who was that person, that last, the last one for this group? Sarah, I think it was Sarah.
Dara with a D.
Oh, Dara. And your initial?
Yes.
Name?
F. Like
F.
Frank.
Oh, F. Okay. All right. Let's start with this lineup. Harlan G, Larry K, Nicole F, Nate, I didn't get your initial, Hanietta R, Reva P, Nancy P, and Dara F. Dara F. Okay, let's get going. Harlan, you're up, followed by Larry. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Amy. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. The man that we have been talking about since the bottom paragraph on page 55, beginning with "in this book," Fitz Mayo, John Henry Fitzhugh Mayo. And John Henry Fitzhugh Mayo, or Fitz Mayo, is going to be the second sobriety in New York after Hank Parkhurst. He will become very, very good friends with Bill Wilson. He will also start AA in Washington, D.C., and he and his wife will become extremely good friends with Bill and Lois. Fitz's sister, Agnes, actually loaned Bill Wilson $1,000 $1,000 to get the big book printed back in 1939, which $1,000 may not seem a lot now, but it was then. Let's take a look at the paragraph. One night when confined in a hospital, Fitzmaio was approached by an alcoholic. Who was this alcoholic? Was Silas Bent. Silas Bent was one of the very early AA members in New York who was in and out of sobriety, in and out and in and out. Hank Parkhurst was sober at the time, and then Fitz would get sober. And Silas will invite Fitz to come to meetings at Bill Wilson's house. The hospital that he is going to be confined in is going to be the Towns Hospital in New York, and Fitz will also get the problem from Dr. Silkworth. Now, he says, if there's a God, remember, he was a minister's son. His story, by the way, our Southern friend, Fitzmaio's story, appears on page 208 of the fourth edition. It's one of the stories that can never be excluded because it's referred to in the body of the first 164. But so he says, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. This indicates he's willing to be open to the possibility of a God, but he's mad at God. He's angry at God. But later, alone in his room, he asks himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I've known are wrong? Then he says, who are you to say there is no God? My life was a dumpster fire. I had nothing. I had no direction. I was in OA. My parents had just died. Bang, bang. I had nobody, I had nothing, I was absolutely so morbidly obese that even in my 20s, I could barely get in and out of a car, I could barely walk down the street, and here was God presenting himself to me in the meetings, and when I accepted the fact that I need this spiritual awakening, my life got better, remains better, continues to get better, but while I was obdurate, scared, while I was jealous and comparing myself to other people, my life could not move forward. I still am plagued by those things, and they are products of fear. But the bottom line for me is this, and this is what Fitz is going to find out. And he is going to find out that the more he embraces this idea that there is a God, the more he embraces this idea of the spiritual way of life, the better and better and better his life will get. Now, he is going to die of pancreatic cancer in 1943, but he will have 8 years of blissful sobriety before he passes away. He will have a good life. He will have friends. His life will expand exponentially. And the bottom line is, I am absolutely in that situation. Yes, I have challenges in my life. Yes, not everything goes my way. Yes, I'm still plagued by waves of self-pity. Yes, I still get jealous, things like that. But the more I accept this God, the more I accept the spiritual way of life, the better my life gets. With that, I will pass. Thank you, Amy, for your service.
Thank you so much, Harlan G. Love me some history. All right, Larry K., you are up, followed by Nicole. Go ahead, Larry.
Thanks, Amy. Some of this background noise probably is mine. I'm at the airport here, so I'm going to set my timer, though. Okay, which I just did. So, yeah, I'll just love the history. Who am I to say there is no God? You know, for me, to say there's no God takes a lot of guts. Because basically, I'm saying that I am all-knowing, and in my very limited life experience, let's face it, you know, it's that I have more wisdom than all the others that have come before me throughout history. And I'm saying that based on a few feelings I have, which change like the wind, right? Some of the wisest people who have ever lived are misguided. And as much as I'd like to convince myself otherwise, I saw those people of faith in God as mistaken. And for me, it was incredibly self-centered. It was a self-centered position to take, right? However silent and smiling I was, you know, I held on to my self-righteous judgment of others. And yet the big book describes people like me on page 62. They knew me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. It wasn't the Kit Kat bars, wasn't my upbringing, wasn't my finances or my traumas, all important stuff. But my troubles, even my closed-mindedness about God, are basically of my own making. The big book reminds me that these troubles arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, even though he usually doesn't think so. I don't always think so. And frankly, I don't want to be that kind of person. I want to be humble and open-minded. I want to be willing to listen and learn. And while I believe I have no right to say there's no God, conversely, I have every right to seek the truth. And that includes listening to you wise people and not shutting you out. You know, so, you know, I'm at the airport right now. I'm headed down to Florida to serve, pitch in at a big book retreat in Jacksonville. And I'll share something with you. I have some things in my suitcase. I got my big book. I got some toothpaste, I think. I think I threw in some socks. But the most important thing I can bring with me is a humble heart, Amy, you know, and compassion and compassionate presence. Because honestly, if I don't bring love, authentic love, nobody will give a damn what comes out of my mouth. I'll be just a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal because I'm reminded what I do speaks so loudly, folks can't hear what I'm saying. You know, I can speak the truth right out of our text, but if I'm a judgmental and critical messenger, the text will never land for them. No way. I won't be of maximum service to God. I want to be a conduit of his love, her power, its way of life, not mine. With that, I pass. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you so much. Safe travels, Larry. Thank you for your service. I'll take humility over a toothbrush any day. Okay. And also, that's Larry K. from Chicago and Harlan G. from Arizona. Sorry, I forgot to say where they're from. Okay. Nicole S., I think it's Nicole S., you're up, followed by Nick S. Please go ahead, Nicole.
Good morning. This is Nicole S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Colorado. Thank you, Amy, for your service. And I really relate, you know, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. And I came into program not having a religion, but having a faith in God. And but I still, you know, I was just ashamed before God and for how I was eating and what I was doing and just you know, I would ask God to just remove this illness, and I expected that, you know, I was just thinking, well, he hasn't done this for me. He's just going to remove this illness and I'll never eat like this again. And I had to really realize through step one that, you know, I had warped my brain into twisted thinking, and I have this illness. I'm always going to have this illness. And it wasn't a matter of, you know, trying harder and being more and, you know, giving it 30 days of not binging and purging that I could develop a habit and never eat like that again. And then, you know, with having faith, realizing, you know, God's not going to just, you know, be the Santa Claus and just perform according to what I expect him to and what I want him to, what I think is best for me. But it had to come to, you know, thy will, not mine, be done. And to just realize that, you know, there's certain things I need to do, like getting a food plan and putting the food down and working these steps, you know, and that, you know, God wants to help me, though he desperately wants to help me, because if I get recovered, I can help others. I can serve him by helping others, and I can partner with him. And so I really had to get this right relationship with God, and not just expect him to do certain things that I think are best for me. I had to get down to my right size. So I'm so grateful for this program. It just lays out, you know, 12 steps. It's a way of life. And thank you all for your service. I pass.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicole S. from Colorado. Okay, Nick S., you're up, followed by Henrietta R. Please go ahead, Nick.
Good morning, family. My name is Nick S. from Tennessee. I just, I'm really, truly grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater today. But this says, who are you to say there is no God? You know, I was brought up very religious. and it still wasn't God. This disease, I'm grateful because God gave me this disease, and finally I get to find God. You know, just so much is what is shared has touched my life, and it took me back. Like, I could hear the Holy Spirit when Harlan was sharing. He was talking about his story and the things, but I was hearing the preachings of old times and the Spirit, like the literally the Holy Ghost scripture. And I'm cleared out. Like, since October the 5th, I gave up nicotine, and it was because somebody on this story talked about they were abstinent and recovered, and they gave up nicotine. Y'all, I'm trying to slay every demon. I'm an African-American woman. I've been homeless. I've washed myself in the bathroom. I'm a recovered drunk. I brushed, talking about brushing your teeth. I remember one time I was homeless, and I brushed my teeth in the back of a BP, and I washed my son's hair under that sink. Even my sobriety didn't give me God. My abstinence, the ability to conquer food, gave me this ability to feel and to see brighter colors and to hear greater things. I'm glad I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, because the smallest thing, I used to didn't think God cared about my food. And now I realize he cares even down to the my body, even down to the morsel of bread I put in my body. So I don't put those things in my body today. You know, and my nutritionist talks about my maintenance weight to be 175. I think he's outside of my body. I mean, I think he's outside of his mind. I got so large to where I'm still not at maintenance weight. It's 3.5 years. I was in a 5XL screaming to be in a 6XL. Literally, the threads was like, it's time to go to the next size up from a 6XL. I can put on a small today. I want to be so small that when people look at me, all they see is God. It used to aggravate me when my peers, my coworkers who saw me that large, they would say, what you trying to do, disappear? How small you trying to get? Skinny, mini? I never heard those things my entire life. It would make me want to turn inside out. Because when I present today, all you see is somebody tall, thin, you know, I look like I got it together. But like Harlan was saying, sometimes those waves of self-pity still try to overcome me, still try to overtake me. And one day I was walking on the river recently, and I thought to myself, I bet this disease hates my guts. And I said, good, because I fucking hate it too. It will take a human being, and it will shrivel. It shriveled me up. It cut me to threads. And then listen to a vision for you. I remember I heard one lady say, I'd rather drink glass and chew metal then go back to the way that my life used to be. I'm trying. That's why I'm in contact with a nutritionist. My new sponsor told me you gave away 2 body sizes. It's probably time that you see a nutritionist again. And I didn't want to, because all the nutritionists, all the therapists, all the psychoanalysis, all the group therapy, it did shit to this disease. This big book, the family of OA I had before I got here with you guys, it loved on me in a way that it took all the blinders off my eyes. It is as if a new spirit had been poured into me. And today I can say, this is the day that the Lord has made, and I get to rejoice with you all, and I get to be glad. And so with that, I pass. Thank you for your service.
Thank you so much, Nick F. from Tennessee. All right, Henrietta, I know I'm butchering your name. I beg your pardon. Henrietta R. I know it's not Henrietta. I'm sorry. Please go ahead, followed by Reva P. Did I? Henrietta?
I'm sorry. I couldn't. No, I mean, you're fine. You're fine. Amy, thank you. It's okie dokie. It's okie dokie. my name is Henrietta. C H A N A Y E T T A. The letter R, and I'm from Texas, Plano, Texas.
Thank you.
And I'm the only Henrietta in the thing, so if you want to call me, that'd be great. But just leave a message if you don't get me. So anyway, thank you. I am Henrietta R. from Texas, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and I'm so glad to be here. And this is a wonderful paragraph I think it's one of the best paragraphs. It's when he, you know, gets this bolt of lightning. Now, very few people get a bolt of lightning. I don't know, few, but you know, not a lot. I have had a bolt of lightning, but it didn't keep me abstinent forever. I did have to try again. But when I came into program over four decades ago, God had done stuff for me, but it caused me grief and hurt me, he didn't give me my way, and so I was angry at God. And since I was angry at God and it said that God could restore us to sanity, I was so excited because I knew I was totally insane. I was a mess. I was an awful person. And you know what? I didn't think I was deserving of him to give me to restore me to sanity. Today, every morning, I say thank you for giving me sanity, for helping me become sane one day at a time. And I did have the kind of spiritual experience that I got after years and years and years, and it just worked on me, even though I had a thunderbolt at one time in a hospital after almost dying. I did have that awakening, and I was abstinent for a long time again. You know, I've had 10 years and 10 years and thrown them away, and you know, but anyway, it doesn't matter. The matter is that today I am so grateful. I am so grateful. And I would never say there's no God. I know there's a God. I love God. And he loves me unconditionally. My whole life has been a miracle ever since I stepped into the door of Overeaters Anonymous. And there's a miracle out there for every one of us. If you haven't had your miracle, hold on to your britches because it's going to happen. So don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. I'll say it three times. Like we say, surrender, surrender, surrender. Don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. I love you guys. Thank you, Amy. I love you too. Thanks for doing the service.
Thanks so much, Anieta. That's right. Don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. Keep coming back. All right. Thank you for your patience. I will get it right. All right. Okay, so that was Anieta from Texas. And just a friendly reminder, if you came in a little bit late, we are on page 56 in the chapter We Agnostics, going through the first and second paragraph. Okay, we're going to keep rolling here with Reva P. and then Nancy P. Please go ahead, Reva.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. The first thing I noticed in this paragraph is he was approached by an alcoholic who had known from experience, a spiritual experience. So he was approached by somebody in whom the problem had been solved. So to remember, you know, who is guiding me through the steps, I want somebody who has had the experience and is what we now call recovered. But the most important thing that I learn from this man is questioning. And for me, that's like the transition from step one to step two. Because first he asks the question, is it possible that all the religious people I've known are wrong? But then he asks it the opposite way. So for me, how he's questioning is it possible that the 12 steps will work for me too, or won't work for me too? And I think step two is about maybe, just maybe. Not only, you know, there is a God. Like I think for me, I knew there was a God, but I think it's asking the question and entertaining the idea by sweeping away this prejudice that maybe the steps will work for me too. Maybe the miracles will happen for me too. And who am I to say that, you know, if I do what other people did, if I do what somebody who in whom the problem had been solved tells me they did, and I follow the instructions, that it's not going to work. Who am I to say that? And I love, you know, I actually went back to this man's story, and I love how he has this, you know, back and forth with the recovered person who approaches him. And he says, well, you know, God hasn't done anything for me. Like, yeah, he believes in God, but God's not doing what I want, kind of thing. And this man tells him, well, you've probably tried praying like this. When you've been in a jam, you've said, God, please do this or that, like, you know, me with my Santa Claus list. And then you didn't get it, and you said, hey, there is no God. So he said, well, that's not the way. The thing I do, and this is what helps me, the thing I do is to say, God, here I am, and here are all my troubles. I've made a mess of things and can't do anything about it. And that includes the food and other things in life, right? You take me and all my troubles and do anything you want with me. And that's how I pray. I'm not in the results business. So that's what I learned from this man. Yes, God is doing for me. Yes, it's not always what I want, but it's probably the best for me, even when I don't get what I want, even though I don't always think so at the time. So with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Reva P. Okay, Nancy P, you're up. And then we're going to, oh, no, and then we have Dara, and then we'll take a few more names. Okay, Nancy, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P, recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. So, you know, we agnostics, I personally, I mean, everybody knows, I think, on this meeting that I'm super agnostic. And I never said ever that there's no God, nor did I ever say there is one. And that's the crux of my agnosticism. Like, that was a conundrum. That was an unanswerable riddle to me, both sides of that. So finally, you know, I decided that I was going to remove myself from that. And, you know, when I did that, I was able to hear and see, you know, what the answers were. You know, I didn't have, you know, what I wanted. This guy says, you know, get fall to his knees and ask this question, who are you to say there is no God? I don't care what that question was. What I care about is that he's like looking for a place of rest. You know, my mind, I was looking for a place of rest. I didn't want to be questioning anymore. I didn't want to be frantically, like, getting another sponsor. You know, I've had about a billion. I mean, I call her my real sponsor because I've talked to her 5 days a week on the phone for 40 years. But I get another sponsor to whip me into shape. And I don't need to be flogged. You know, I don't want to be castigated because I sneezed instead of coughed, you know. I have certain things that I never compromise on. I don't hurt myself with food under any circumstances. You know, and I have guidelines on what I do. I don't eat standing up. I don't eat off little plates, and I don't eat finger food. And I don't eat at other people's houses unless I'm sitting down with a plate sitting in front of me. Those are sort of my loose rules. But I've done those things. You know, I've been, you know, like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to go to the gym every day, and I'm going to do, you know, like, we've heard people talk like that, where they have this compulsion to do certain things, and they've said it doesn't bring them any relief. And, you know, I never got one speck of serenity from like, abstinence and sponsorship and all that. And what I desperately wanted, what I see in this guy who says, you know, falls to his knees, and oh, my God, you know, like, who are you to say? He wanted a place of rest for his brain. And that's desperately what I wanted. And, you know, when I called my friend that day in November of 2017, and I sobbed out my pain with my box of donuts in the car, you know, who would have known, not me, that, you know, from one day to the next, from one day to the next, I have not had to hurt myself with food at all. It'll be 7 years, December 1st. And how could I have known that? And so, you know, when I say, you know, I wanted to remove myself from the whole question, it was like I was water trying to flow uphill. And what I needed to do was take the path of least resistance, like water does. And so, you know, when you take the path of least resistance, amazing things happen. I mean, water took the path of least resistance and carved out the Grand Canyon. You know, I watched a video yesterday of a half a billion monarch butterflies. It's Nancy. You know, flying up and, you know, and they take the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance for me is one thing and one thing only. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And I'll just say one last thing. You know, if something could make me believe in God, it would be Nick F. That woman has joy. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Dara F., and then we're going to take some more names. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Dara F. from Virginia. And Dara, with a D, like donut or dog or something like that, yes. And
thank you.
My sponsor suggested that I dive right in, the water's warm, and start sharing on a regular basis rather than just sitting in the background. So here I am doing what I'm told, which I'm happy to be a person who can do, who's open to suggestions. With the subject of God, I was raised with a religion without a belief. I was raised that culturally in a religion, but no belief in any power greater than myself. And I have a lot of intellectual resistance to believing in a God. But I get around that by just acting as if and just doing. And I have kind of like two separate sides of my brain. I have this intellectual side where if I get into that battle, I'm like, there isn't a God. That makes this stupid. It makes no sense. How can there be like some, you know, oversized man with a beard floating around up there deciding what to do with every one of us human beings? So that concept of God just doesn't work for me. And that's okay if it works for somebody else. It doesn't work for me. But I do believe in prayer. I do believe in love. I believe in the universe. I believe there's something bigger than me. I like what I've heard a lot about. I only have to believe two things about God, that there is one and that it's not me. I think if I make it that simple, then I'm able to break down the intellectual boundaries that I have about believing in God. But I do have almost 6 years of back-to-back abstinence, and I'm really, really grateful for the program. And if somebody like me can work around the concept of God, I think anybody who is willing to just do it and stop questioning it can do it. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dara F. from Virginia. Okay, so we are ready to take a few more names and numbers. Friendly reminder, names and initials. Friendly reminder, we're on page 56, the first and second paragraph. So I think we've got room for about two or three people, maybe four.
Anita J.
I got Anita J. Who is that? Anita, I got you.
Ruben H. Israel.
Somebody H. Can I get your first name again, please? Someone H. from Israel. Did I get that right?
Ruben H.
Ruben. Okay, gotcha. All right, anyone else?
I am Bruja from Toronto, Canada. I'm a compulsive.
Bruja?
Yes.
Toronto. Terry F. Okay, let's stop there. I think hopefully we can get you guys in. Let's see how it goes, Terry. Okay, Anita J., you're up. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is Anita J., and I am recovered in Westboro, Massachusetts. Well, part of me wants to join in and sing Amazing Grace. Because I often sing hymns in the shower. It's one of my, it just evolved like that. And boy, I sound good in there. But just who are you to say there is no God? You know, two of them, one from each family, grandsons in high school, both came up with, there is no, I'm an atheist. I thought, I don't know, what is it, something about being a junior in high school? I don't know what it was. But the what I could do for them, I wasn't going to give my testimony to these kids. I try to, you know, like they say in the big book, you just recover. You just live your testament. I feel it's the same with how I feel about God. But I did teach them something, the difference between an atheist and an agnostic. And I said, the most I could believe about you is agnostic. You don't know. You don't know. I don't know either, but I choose to believe there is one because something has been working in my life. I grew up, though, thinking like a child, that if I were really good, nothing would ever bad ever happen to me, and bad happened. So what was wrong wasn't that God let me down there. It's that I had God's promise wrong. He promised to be with me, and I believe he has been. And, you know, my son, too, when he was in an automobile accident and somebody died, I thought, why? Where was God? And the answer really was, he was there. He was in the road crying with your son. And, you know, you'd have to really beat me to a pulp for me to say there is no God. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Anita J. from Massachusetts. Ravain H. from Israel, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. Ravain H. from Israel, grateful, I believe, from the grace of God that I'm abstaining today, 70-plus days. I think what stands out for me in this paragraph, how I take from it, is the two ideas of questioning religious people versus non-religious people. Who am I to say there is no God? Somehow those two ideas strike me most. When I reflect on my history of my own development of acceptance of God as a ruler of my life, it has just changed over the years. In my early years, I never related it to food. I always related to it as an intellectual type of understanding. Well, there had to be some reason that I'm here on earth, and if I just go back and say something created something, 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 it's got to end somewhere. So I always said it just seemed illogical to not say there was a God. And for me, though, that didn't necessarily help me with my life. It was a beginning. So I guess you could say if there's a beginning, there's always a help. In my next stage, or one stage that I think about, is being outside of a pizza store and saying, God, would you please help me not go into that pizza store? And then thank you, God, and then walk into the pizza store. So I like the way that the way we use this literature is abstinence and the 12 steps, that I do buy into this idea that there is a willingness of myself to surrender food, surrender, that I need to surrender to a form of abstinence that takes me away from my alcoholic food. And I do believe God helps me do that, although, like it says here, I don't get great thunderbolts, but I do get, and I do, though, get thoughts. And the thoughts that I get are, I am here to help you, and this is a partnership, and it involves the two of us. If you want to be in charge, go ahead. I will let you do that. But get up in the morning, and I am always here for you. So I don't know. I have this kind of like ongoing relationship with God, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you, Amy, for your service.
Thank you so much, Ravain H. from Israel. Okay, Bruja from Toronto, Canada, you're up. And if there's any time left, Terry, we'll get you in there. Okay, go ahead, please. Bruja from Toronto, please press star 1 to unmute.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
I'm recovering by the grace of God and really very grateful for all my blessings. I wake up in the morning, which is a miracle, to my alarm, and I'm able to come to this meeting, which I've come to for over a year or two, and it really makes a difference in my life listening to other compulsive overeaters that are recovering. And it's not easy for me because I have lots of challenges in my life, but with God as my companion, I really am able to deal with whatever comes my way. I just love God, and I'm just grateful, grateful, grateful for all my blessings. And I've learned that this program is my lifeline and connects me to God and connects me to other people in this program and in the world. Do you know, I wake up asking God, how can I be of service today? And at the end of the day, I ask, did I make a difference? And I read a sign this morning that said, be the person that makes another one smile. And I thought, that's beautiful. And that's how I live my life, you know? It's simple, but it's not easy. And I had my last binge I had before COVID. I thought I was having a heart attack. I ended up in an ambulance and threw up all over the place. Not a very pretty thing. But that keeps me sane because I go back to that person whose food was more important than anything. And it's just a wonderful way to live, knowing that on a daily basis, one day at a time, I'm able to accept the things I can't change. But I was very judgmental, very critical, and angry at God. And because I've had a lot of childhood trauma, and I have issues with what's going on in the world, and I realize that I'm not responsible for that, that I just have to pray for the people who are suffering, and that I have to be responsible for my own recovery and for the recovery of people that God puts in my path. So grateful, grateful, grateful. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Bruja from Toronto. All right, Terry S., we've got 2 minutes. Please go ahead, Terry.
Hi, this is Sherry S. in Wisconsin.
Sherry,
you know,
here we go.
Yeah, Sherry with S. in Wisconsin. Who am I to say there is no God? You know, I've always believed in God, but boy, throughout the day, I like to think that I'm God. So, you know, I have to remind myself that I need to remember that I'm not God every day. I look at the things, you know, in my life and, you know, for instance, I'm single and I'm mad at God because I don't have a, you know, a boyfriend or a husband, all that jazz. But when I'm in that self-pity, I'm forgetting all the gifts that God has given me. Like, he's given me, I'm coming up on 10 months of abstinence, and he's released 107 pounds, and I'm financially able to take care of myself. I don't need to have that. That's a want that God has done miracles in my life and continues to do miracles in my life, that I don't have to sit there and go to the food. You know, that's proof that there is a God, because Sherry's will never gave me those results. So, excuse me, I have to remember, you know, that while I believe there is a God, I have to remember that I need to turn to him throughout the day, that because my will just go right in there and act like I'm God. And, you know, that's why I have to come to these meetings, and that's why I have to work my steps to remind me that I'm not God.
That's time.
Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Sherry S. from Wisconsin. I'd like to thank everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the share ID for today, Thursday, October 31st, 7 a.m. Eastern Time. Meeting is 21,877. That's 21877. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Anne Marie M. please read A Vision for You?
This is Anne Marie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know God, we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who still suffers, is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you cannot get. You haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Although, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him as to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
I'm just waiting for the recording. Yes, I know. I'm just waiting for the recording to be stopped. But then we close in the Serenity Prayer.